the last extraordinary 13 days, aligned with the sun-carrying deer energy of Manik, we're now getting into the full blast of the sun, metaphorically speaking, in the Ahau Trasina, where the forces of solar heat and power not only place even more attention on enlightenment, but also bring a high level of creativity into play. Welcome to episode 7 of Navigating the Energies of Life, a podcast that looks at how the energies of the Maya calendar are at work in the world and how they apply to daily lives. This is Marguerite Paquin, continuing with a podcast to accompany my horoscope blog that tracks the days of this calendar. The emphasis for both is on connections between the energies of this calendar and events going on in the world, and ways in which these energies relate to personal lives. For anyone new to this, you can find a brief overview to this timekeeping system in episode 1. Just before we have a look at where we are currently, I want to mention something related to the Maya calendar that popped up in the media last week. It was yet another ridiculous theory, this time in the form of a tweet that sprang up a few days before the summer solstice and set the Twitterverse ablaze. Several news networks picked it up, and you had outlets like India TV publishing headlines such as, quote, "Julian Calendar's prediction about end of the world on June 21st leaves Twitterati berserk," unquote, with a subheading saying that the Maya calendar's prediction about December 2012 being the end of the world was a mistake and that the prediction should have been for 2020. Absolutely not! All of this is so wrong on so many levels. Just nonsense every which way you look at it. Anyone who's been paying attention to the Maya calendar in any way other than trying to perpetuate falsehoods about the end of the world would know that this calendar is a cyclical, highly complex system of timekeeping. It's not a doomsday predictor. Again, the core of the system is a cycle of 260 days. It's the heart of the system that represents interconnections between 20 unique solar forces in combination with 13 unique numerical powers to create a count of days called Dzogchen. Each of the 260 days in the cycle is unique, and every person carries the energetic imprint of the forces that were in play at the time of their birth. Those energies greatly influence how people see and interact in the world. Both the blog and this podcast follow the Mesoamerican calendrical tradition of timekeeping involving tresinas, 13-day periods that also continuously cycle, representing particular energetic themes for a total of 20 different tresina periods within the overall 260-day period, a period or time zone that itself continuously recycles on and on, era after era. The central Dzogchen that we're primarily dealing with here is one component, the core component, of a system that has many other moving parts. The energies associated with this overall timekeeping system repeat in many different ways as the various parts of the system interconnect. So keep in mind that the Maya calendar does not come to an end, no matter what nonsense you might hear to suggest otherwise, but various energies do return to positions of intersection with other energies, with important returns generally referred to as period endings. One of the most important of these is the calendar round return, often referred to as a new fire every 52 years. I mention this quite often in my blog. This is where you can sometimes see echoes from earlier times coming through as the same energies come back into alignment. As I mentioned before, we are currently seeing some of the echoes from 52 years ago, which was 1968. This is particularly evident at the moment with the massive anti-racism protest demonstrations taking place, not only across the U.S., but worldwide. Energetically, this is a realignment of the same number plus day plus number plus month energies that were in place during that year. The year that the Smithsonian has referred to as, quote, the year that shattered America, unquote. That June was particularly eventful in terms of the civil rights movement, and equally significantly, 1968 also brought the first outbreak of the H3N2 flu epidemic in Hong Kong that spread to several countries over the next few months. During this past Monique Tresina that ran from June 9th to the 21st, symbols of racism and colonialism were being toppled everywhere, not only in the U.S., but in the U.K., Canada, and elsewhere. Statues were toppled, flags with Confederate symbols came down, four portraits of Confederate House speakers were removed from the U.S. Capitol, an order from Nancy Pelosi, and long-standing brands such as Aunt Jemima and Uncle Ben's announced an end to putting faces associated with racist stereotypes on food boxes and other containers. Long-time companies that had been associated with the slave trade, such as Lloyd's of London, apologized to the black community and promised to make amends. Petitions were put together to rename streets and military bases. This kind of significant rethinking could also be seen in the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling as it shot down Trump's bid to end the DACA, that is Deferred Action for Children Arrivals program, upholding lower court rulings that found his move to rescind that program to be unlawful and in violation of the Administrative Procedure Act, which says a government action cannot be, quote, arbitrary, capricious, an abuse of discretion or otherwise not in accordance with the law, unquote, or, quote, unsupported by substantial evidence, unquote. This was a situation that has been affecting an estimated 700,000 young people who entered the U.S. without documents as children. Most of the children protected by the DACA program are from Mexico and other Latin American countries. It was an executive order signed by President Obama in 2012 that shielded these dreamers, as they've been referred to in the media, from deportation and provided work and study permits. So finally, with that Supreme Court decision, those 700,000 young people can now breathe again after being incredibly anxious about their fate for the last several years. So there was a lot of amazingly positive action taking place during this past Monique Tresina. And now, with the full force of AHAO coming in, there's likely to be much more, because the emphasis here is squarely on creative action. But here we have an exceptionally unusual situation, as the AHAO Tresina would traditionally have been seen as highly aligned with the arts. Tragically, with all the shutdowns due to the pandemic, many of those kinds of activities have been severely restricted. Traditionally, the very first day, one AHAO, would have been a welcomed time for great celebration. This would have been a day of flowers when dancers, singers, drummers, storytellers, orators, flower-bedecked revelers would have been fully engaged in the festivities. And as it happened, it seemed that the pandemic restrictions were momentarily forgotten in France on the eve of one Ahau this time, or perhaps the spirit of one Ahau went over and landed squarely on that country, because thousands of people actually did take to the streets to celebrate the Fête de la Musique annual musical festival, totally ignoring social distancing restrictions. It was just good old-fashioned party time with much dancing in the streets, looking much like it might have done if people were actually following the Maya calendar and celebrating the Day of the Flowers on one Ahau. But then everything is odd these days, so who knows? Perhaps Lord One Ahau, or Old Coyote, the god of the dance, who is the patron of this Tresina, just needed to party somewhere. Let's hope it didn't lead to an upsurge of new cases. And so with regard to the arts, this is indeed a major problem at this time. With theaters closed, live performances restricted, sports and nightlife unavailable, comedy and humor almost non-existent, restricted access to places of worship, few people are singing or making music, and artists of all types unable to share their work and connect with the world at large, except maybe on a very small scale or virtually. It's something no one would have thought could ever happen, but here we are. It seems as though all that creative energy that normally would have been channeled into individual expressions now has to be redirected towards getting the world out of the great mess that it's in. Some of it is out there already, finding expression in posters and street murals and protest songs and even internet presentations. Artists and non-artists are now having to move those expressions outward as if their lives depend on it, which it does. Even with regard to the pandemic, there are still millions of people who really don't get the message, hundreds of thousands who are still risking their lives and the lives of others by not adhering to safety guidelines. So it is important to get the message out there. But regardless of how this energy may have to be channeled at the moment, it is undeniable that the loss or suspension of and loss of access to so many of these life-enhancing avenues is having a devastating effect on many, many people. The arts are what lift us up, give us hope, bring us joy, take our minds off problems, help us to lose ourselves in beauty, allow us to interact and connect on so many levels, even sometimes otherworldly levels, and allow us to express the essence of who we are in so many, many ways. In the midst of the racial tensions of the 1960s, it was often music that got us through, as artists such as Bob Dylan, Pete Seeger, and Joan Baez created works that reflected the times and social changes that were unfolding. Pete Seeger left this world on the third day of this Ahau Tresina at age 94 in 2014. Beautiful Joan Baez, who released her 25th studio album in 2018, is still very active and has been posting statements and songs on YouTube related to current events, including a song called For All the Heroes, a variation of Forever Young. And Bob Dylan, who won a Nobel Prize for Literature in 2016, and who, like Joan, is now 79 years young, just published a new album, his first in 8 years, called Rough and Rowdy Ways, which has been deemed, quote, gorgeous and meticulous, unquote. I would concur. One reviewer of this album said Dylan still sounds like he could go on forever. In his False Prophet song on that album, he proclaimed that he is an enemy of the unlived, meaningless life. Amen to that. Thank goodness we at least have access to music through our various devices, but that does not begin to compare with the power and impact of being present in person for a performance or a presentation or any kind of artistic interaction. Let's just have a quick look at some of the numbers before we look at the rest of the Tresina. Right now, not long after the start of this Tresina, the numbers are revealing that nearly 2 million more cases of COVID-19 have been registered between the start of the last Tresina on June 9th to the start of this one on June 22nd, a rate that has increased considerably since the previous 13-day period that saw an increase of about 1 million at that time. So that rate of increase is almost doubled in just 2 weeks. Worldwide, there are over 9 million cases, and over this past 13 days, nearly 60,000 more people have died from it. As expected, after all those crowds out on beaches and in other public places over Memorial Day weekend, the number of cases in the U.S. has been skyrocketing, with at least 7 states registering over 100,000 cases. The numbers in Brazil, Russia, India, and several Latin American countries is also rapidly increasing, which is certainly not good, but as of this day, records are showing that more than 5 million people have now recovered from it. So that part is good news. Beyond that, as this Tresina was coming into place on Wanahao on June 22nd, Venus was rising as the morning star, right on schedule. I have records of this Venus connection with Wanahao that go back actually thousands of years. And these alignments really are still functioning like clockwork. It's quite amazing. I mentioned earlier that in Maya mythology, this morning star phase of Venus's cycle was often seen as being a kind of dangerous phase, so it seems to be a good time to continue to be cautious. To boot, on the last day of the last Tresina, which was Sunday, June 21st, there was a ring of fire solar eclipse at the same time as the new moon. So as we go through this Ahau Tresina, the moon is now waxing from the new moon state when the solar eclipse happened to a full moon that will be in place on July 4th, which will be the last day of this Tresina. And at that time, there will be a lunar eclipse. So some very interesting alignments over these 13 to 14 days. I also mentioned in the blog that Inti Raymi, the Inca Festival of the Sun, is happening at this time, on the third day, at which time a great ceremony is being held in Cusco in Peru to honor the sun god and Pachamama, Mother Earth. These were the deities that the Inca considered as ruling over the destinies of humankind. This festival is a large and colorful celebration still performed in the traditional manner, with the figurative Incan ruler presiding over the processions and ceremonies. It seems significant that this festival is coinciding at this time with this sun-related Tresina, with the focus of Inti Raymi being the honoring of the sun itself. There was no mention of this being canceled due to the pandemic, so I assume it's still happening. It is particularly important to the people of Peru, so I hope everyone stays safe. As mentioned, in the realm of the classic Maya, this Tresina was welcomed traditionally as a time for celebration, with the very first day, Wanahao, being observed as a celebrational day of flowers. The flower concept related to this dracaena is reflected in many of the ancient glyphic languages where flowers were often used to represent Ahau days. It's the sun, of course, that the flowers are opening up to. The Maya, on the other hand, often represent this day with a face, sometimes very abstract, almost a little like a little smiley face, or sometimes even quite elaborate, as in the head or face of a king. Extending this idea, Ahau was seen variously as sun, flower, and lord, as in king or ruler. So this is the overarching energy washing through this Ahau dracaena and working with the other day sun energies of this period. Note that this is also an energy associated with heat and fire, and there are a number of very large wildfires underway at this time, such as the bush fire in Arizona that's burned over 186,000 acres, the huge bighorn blaze that's threatening hundreds of homes in the Tucson area, and the Magnum fire in northern Arizona burning near the Grand Canyon, as well as the Lac Saint-Jean forest fire in Quebec. And speaking of fires, former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton's tell-all book titled The Room Where It Happened is now being released on this second day of this dracaena, a book that's sure to fan more than a few flames, as this is a book that the White House and U.S. Department of Justice tried to block. This is just one of a series of incendiary situations that could potentially become bonfires during this dracaena, particularly since the House Judiciary Committee is now investigating the politicization of the U.S. Department of Justice, and the U.S. Supreme Court is about to give their ruling on Trump's financial and tax records. As highlighted in the blog, there are several events within this current Ahau dracaena where echoes of events from last October's Ahau dracaena might be seen, relating to court hearings pertaining to those financial issues. So it will be interesting to see how closely current events might echo those earlier events. Another incendiary point of reference might be seen from the perspective of global warming, something that certainly hasn't gone away just because other crises have taken the spotlight. Just as this dracaena was coming in, it was reported that temperatures in the Arctic Circle are likely to have hit an all-time record high, reaching a scorching 38 degrees Celsius, or 100 Fahrenheit, in a small Siberian town northeast of Moscow. Apparently, over the past few weeks, temperatures have hit record levels inside the Arctic Circle, and we're just now getting into summer. The third day of this time frame is 3-eek, the activation of wind, breath, and spirit, often associated with communication. This is the day of Inti Raymi in Peru, as I've already mentioned. This is the day when the deployment of over 40,000 National Guards in the U.S. could come to an end, one day short of meeting the required 90 emergency service days needed to attain certain retirement and educational benefits. They have been helping with things like setting up and sanitizing hospitals and enforcing safety guidelines related to COVID-19. A bipartisan group of 75 House members have sent a letter to Defense Secretary Mark Esper to register their objection to this heartless decision by the White House, particularly since these troops are still needed in a country that has such a skyrocketing number of coronavirus cases. It's possible that some hidden secrets might be revealed on Four Akbal, June 25th, since insight into deep dark mysteries can often come to light under this influence. Blackouts have often occurred under this influence as well, as happened last October. When this was in place, when California's largest power company cut power to some 800,000 locations, affecting an estimated 2 million people in 34 counties in North Central and Coastal California, in the largest preventative power outage in California history. It even hit major areas such as San Francisco and in Silicon Valley. It was an effort to prevent wildfires during high winds. Thousands of schools were closed and hospitals had to switch to emergency generators. FiveCon on June 26th is an energy often associated with youthful vitality and prosperity. This is the Maya birth energy of Benito Juarez, who assumed the office of the 26th president of Mexico in 1858 and is now regarded as a national hero and preeminent symbol of Mexican nationalism. He was born into a Zapotec Indian tribe in Oaxaca, but his parents died when he was just 3 and he was raised by relatives. Although he didn't start school until he was 12, he eventually entered Oaxaca's Institute for the Arts and Sciences and received his law degree, and then began applying his education to help poor farmers in their battles with landowners. Eventually, he was elected to Oaxaca's legislature, which led towards his appointment as Oaxaca's acting, and then later elected, governor. Some years later, he became the appointed president of the Supreme Court, and sometime after that, he emerged as the president of Mexico. It's a long story, but his biography tells us that, in essence, he helped to rebuild Mexico's infrastructure, reduce the power of the military, which was put under civilian control, and promoted free speech, free press, and free assembly. His leadership style was known as La Reforma del Norte, the Reform of the North. Under his authority, large tracts of church land were redistributed to the poor. The church was separated from the state, and civil rights were greatly expanded. It's an amazing story of someone working with the germinating energy of his FiveCon birth energy in conjunction with the enlightenment energy of Ahau. Note in the blog that 6 Chicchan in the middle of the Chacina is a structuring type of energy associated with life force, the arts, and higher knowledge. One cycle since a number of key events took place in the courts and Congress last year. Some of those are noted in the blog. If we have any echoes from those events at this time, it will be another interesting day. Eight-Manik on June 29th is a special day within this Chacina known to the Maya as the Day of the Lord Deer, a resurrection type of energy aligned with sacrifice and reciprocity. Here we'll have a doubling of solar energy from the Manik element as well as the Chacina itself. There's also a very strong fire heat aspect to it. This is the Maya birth energy of Catherine Drexel, the daughter of a 19th century American financier and philanthropist. In her early life, after the painful death of her mother, she traveled with her father and sisters to the western states, where they saw firsthand the poverty and destitution of Native Americans on reservation lands. When her father died in 1885, she and her sisters inherited a vast fortune, which she used to endow schools and churches, for African Americans and Native Americans in the South and West. She eventually became a Catholic sister, and through her philanthropic work, helped to establish 145 missions, 50 schools for African Americans, and 12 schools for Native Americans. She was later canonized as a saint after the church determined that her intervention had resulted in a child being miraculously healed of deafness. Again, a long story short, but an interesting illustration of someone channeling their eight manique birth energy into lifelong, selfless service, helping to bring education and provide better living conditions to many who were in very great need. Another very important day coming in at this time is 11 Oak on July 2nd. This is inspirational love or guidance type of force, a special burner day, an important shift point within the cycle, representative of heart, love, fire, guidance, and even passion. One of the best examples of this force in action is Terry Fox, the young Canadian athlete born during the summer of 1958, who lost a leg to cancer, but did not let it stop him. In 1980, this remarkable young man embarked on a grueling east to west cross Canada run to raise money and awareness for cancer research. This was his marathon of hope, during which his goal was to raise $1 from each of Canada's then 24 million people. He began with little fanfare on the East Coast, dipping his leg into the Atlantic Ocean, and ran the equivalent of a full marathon every day, using all his strength to hop, run on one good leg and one prosthetic one as he proceeded west on his journey. By the time he reached Ontario, he had become a national star and was making public appearances with businessmen, athletes, and politicians to further his cause. Unfortunately, he was forced to end his run outside Thunder Bay when the disease spread to his lungs. His dream of completing his marathon ended then, and he died 9 months later. But his dream did not dwindle. He had raised $1.7 million by the time he was forced to stop, and donations kept pouring in. Before his death, he was invested in a special ceremony as a companion of the Order of Canada, the youngest person to be so honored. The Lieutenant Governor of British Columbia named him to the Order of the Dogwood, the province's highest award. Canada's Sports Hall of Fame commissioned a permanent exhibit. He was named the winner of the Lou Marsh Award for 1980 as the nation's top athlete. He was also named Canada's 1980 Newsmaker of the Year. The Ottawa Citizen described the national response to his marathon as, quote, one of the most powerful outpourings of emotion and generosity in Canada's history, unquote. Since then, his marathon of hope has continued on. Roads, schools, plazas, trails, other buildings, and even an icebreaker has been named after him. The Terry Fox Hall of Fame was established in 1994 to recognize people who have made contributions to improve the quality of life of disabled people. A research center was established in his name to conduct leading-edge research into the causes and potential cures for cancer. The Royal Canadian Mint issued a special dollar coin designed for him to commemorate the 25th anniversary of the Marathon of Hope. And even to this day, Terry Fox runs are held in over 9,000 communities across Canada to continue raising funds for this important research. There are also international runs that have the same purpose. To date, over $750 million have been raised worldwide for cancer research in Terry's name. This is an extraordinary illustration of, quote, inspirational love or guidance, unquote, working with the power of a house, enlightenment force in action, in keeping with the energy of Terry Fox's 11 Oak birth. Thank you, Terry, for all you have done and for continuing to inspire. The last day of this time frame, which is called 13 Ebb, transformational vitality or even transformational revitalization, is the other end of that interesting alignment that I mentioned at the outset, with the full moon coming into place along with a lunar eclipse on the 4th of July. This will not be a usual 4th of July in the U.S. this year, as parades have been canceled from California to New York, and many other events have been forced to alter their plans or turn the celebrations into virtual events. But this is an intense energy, so it's a good time to stay vigilant. This is the Maya birth energy of the writer, philosopher, political theorist, and socialist revolutionary Karl Marx, co-author, along with Friedrich Engels, of the highly influential Communist Manifesto, one of the world's most influential political documents. This work summarizes the author's theories about the nature of society and politics, emphasizing the issue of class struggles. They saw what they called the proletariat as one of the lowest economic and social classes of society, whose chief source of income came from manual labor. This group was distinguished as people with skills, including artisans and tradespeople, who had the potential for earning a living, but often earned little. They were not seen necessarily as poor, even though they often were. Other groups were identified as well. One was termed the working class. Yet another was seen as the lumpen proletariat, classified as marginal or even unemployable. And then there were the bourgeois, classified as belonging to middle or upper classes, whose focus was on the accumulation of wealth. With regard to this group, Marx and Engels were, shall we say, not very sympathetic. Here are a few lines. The bourgeoisie, quote, has resolved personal worth into exchange value and has set up that single unconscionable freedom, free trade. In one word, for exploitation veiled by religious and political illusions, it has substituted naked, shameless, direct, brutal exploitation. The bourgeoisie has stripped of its halo every occupation heretofore honored and looked up to with reverent awe. It has converted the physician, the lawyer, the priest, the poet, the man of science into its paid wage laborers. The bourgeoisie has torn away from the family its sentimental veil and has reduced the family relation to a mere money relation. And a little further along these lines, quote, all that is solid melts into air. All that is holy is profaned. And man is at last compelled to face with sober senses his real conditions of life. Unquote. There's much more to this, of course, but it's interesting that much of what he was talking about has really become a worldwide issue. The class divides, the racism, the issue of so-called entitlement. It seems now that the world has been brought to its knees, not just because of the pandemic, but economically, because of this as well. All of this division and exploitation of one group or one set of values over others. It's as if the pandemic has hit this issue head on and the world is changing rapidly because of it. No doubt this Ahau Tresina will shed much more light on the fallout. It seems that it was Marx's mission in life to use his transformational birth energy at the end of this important Tresina to push new ideas forward to help people to more fully realize what was and is really going on in the world. In Moscow, there is a huge memorial to Marx with the inscription, "Proletarians of all countries, unite." Looks like Marx was farsighted enough to see that this would happen, and that is where we are right now. Okay, for anyone listening to this from somewhere other than my website, you can find more information about all of this in my My Account of Days horoscope, either by going to whitepoppress.ca and clicking on horoscope blog, or going to mayacalendararts.com and clicking on horoscope blog. That site includes earlier podcasts, other information on Maya Calendrix, some posts that are written on topics such as birth dates and energy cycling, and some notes about things that I offer, such as coaching services and personalized artworks. For anyone who might like some assistance directly from me in terms of exploring how these energies may work within your own lives, especially if you're working on your own personal transformations and wondering how best to use your own birth energies as part of that, there are a number of options outlined on that Maya Calendar Arts site. There are many different ways in which to work with these energies, many different ways to look at key energetic influences in anyone's specific life. There are core influences and many different energetic allies as well, but all I can do within the context of the blog or podcast is give a few general examples. It's actually quite a bit deeper than that, which I can only get to on a one-to-one basis. Feel free, if you wish, to contact me if you have any questions. Contact information is in the websites, as well as information on subscribing to the horoscope blog. I want to close with a quote from John Lennon, one of the many artists born within this time frame, on 10 Muluk to be precise. Had he lived, John would be turning 80 this December. John, as everyone knows, was an activist as well as one of the planet's most famous songwriters and musicians. He once said, "There are two basic motivating forces, fear and love. When we are afraid, we pull back from life. When we are in love, we open to all that life has to offer, with passion, excitement, and acceptance. We need to learn to love ourselves first, in all our glory and our imperfections. If we cannot love ourselves, we cannot fully open to our ability to love others or our potential to create. Evolution and all hopes for a better world rest in the fearlessness and open-hearted vision of people who embrace life. Let's use the life-enhancing energies of the Ahau Trisena to do just that. Until next time, keep safe, be well. Love to you all.